Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
Welcome to an Ask How to Money episode. This is when all you listeners out there send us voice memos via email. You just pop that phone right up to your mouth. You go to voice memo on your iPhone, or what's the app on the Droids?
You got called something similar. I don't know.
Voice recorder or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's it actually.
But you just record that voice memo, you email it our way, and then we queue those questions up and we seek to provide you with the best answers possible. We've got five great ones this week. A listener is wondering if she should buy a car in this kind of crazy post-pandemic market where prices are all over the place. Another listener is debating whether she should invest in real estate as opposed to the stock market. And then another, he's got a question about rolling over a 401k or converting that 401k. We're going to talk about both of those options that lie before him. Plus, we've got two other questions to get to today, Joel. Looking forward to all five of them.
Yeah.
If you were counting.
I was. Yeah. So busy day here on How to Money. A lot of good questions to get to. But before we get to that, Matt, I just want to mention, we do have a couple of car questions, specifically a car insurance question, and then also a buying a used car question, which is
true.
A difficult time to buy a used car, and it specifically has been over the past couple of years. But I just wanted to present something else on the car front to you before we dive in.
Car heavy episode today.
Yeah. Well, I got this physical letter in the mail the other day from this company called CarShield.
And you love getting stuff in the mail.
I've been getting some weird stuff in the mail lately. I'm like, and it just, I was like, this is something that other people are getting this in the mail too, they need to know
that's true.
That this is crap. And so
you're like my kids. You'd like, as soon as you get home, you like run out to the mailbox, see if there's something in there for them.
I get so excited to see if there's like spammy stuff in there. Well, here's what it says on their mailer. It says, get vehicle service protection before it's too late. And it tells me, hey, guess what? Monthly coverage is going to help you take care of the parts, taxes, and labor on any covered repair. Without a factory warranty or a vehicle service contract on your automobile, you are financially liable for any and all vehicle repairs. Yeah, I know. Like, it's my car.
That's what it takes to own a vehicle.
I signed up to pay for those things, and I don't really need what you're offering because...
So with what you said so far, I'll call out the key phrase that I heard, which is repairs that are covered.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Exactly.
I've got to feel... Of course.
Read
100% of all of these three repairs are covered or whatever.
Right.
I'm sure it's more than three, but I'm sure it's also a lot more difficult than... going to get a repair done yourself.
Well, yeah. So we talked recently about the home warranties and how those are crappy. And part of the reason those are crappy is because, yeah, there's a limitation on what repairs they're going to do. And you pay a fee every single time you do get something repaired. And oftentimes it takes a lot longer, or maybe they won't replace something even though it needs to be fully replaced. They're like, no, we're just going to repair it. But repairing it is a dumb idea. Well, it seems like it's going to be similar with something like this. Plus the cost, it's not cheap. You can get silver, gold, platinum, or diamond coverage anywhere between $79 a month and $109 a month, which my car is probably worth something like $4,000. So I'm literally paying a third of the price of the car annually. To have some sort of repair coverage. So self-insuring is clearly the best way to go in my case and in the case of almost everybody. Like, I can't imagine this works out in anybody's financial favor to go down this path.
Yeah. So I just looked this up, and surprisingly, CarShield, they do get good reviews.
Oh, wow.
And so you might get this thing in the mail and think, maybe do a quick search and realize, oh, no, these guys seem totally legit. But if you look at the complaints, the folks who are complaining, like, they might get around to doing the work. So it's not like it's a total scam. It's just, do you want to have to deal with an intermediary? I mean, it's like going through insurance, basically. This is essentially kind of like a form of insurance. And what's easier, filing a claim with your insurer after you've gotten a wreck, or like going to the tune-up place and getting an oil change?
Yeah.
One of these is not like the other. I guess they're very dissimilar to each other.
Don't you want to be able
to... There's a huge hassle factor as well.
And don't you want to be able to pick where you take your car for service? And you might not be able to under something like this. You might have to go to places that are further away, less convenient. Or
like, oh, we're going to have to look up the repair person on our PPO.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what?
But that's how something like this works.
Yeah. Or is this car repair?
And especially, yeah, hopefully you bought a car that is more reliable by Consumer Reports. And when you look at the annual cost of maintenance for a lot of those cars that are the most reliable, even a 10-year-old car, we're talking about $400 or $500 a year is what you should expect to pay in maintenance costs. Whereas even if you pick the lowest option on this, you're talking about close to $1,000 a year.
Yep.
By the way, they do say it's endorsed by Ice-T and Vivica A. Fox. So
okay. Well, now that you mentioned that, Joel.
Yeah, that sways me. All right. If Ice-T says it says it's cool, then I guess we'll go with it.
Let's get to our beer. This episode, you and I are enjoying a Curzon Rude, and this is a barrel-aged Flanders Red Ale. This is a fantastic beer by a local brewery here in Atlanta, Wild Heaven. Looking forward to enjoying this one. I'm already enjoying it, but I'm looking forward to talking about it more at the end of the episode.
For sure. All right, let's get on to it, Matt. Again, you mentioned that people can submit their questions. If you've got a personal finance question and you want to know how you get it over to us, we'll just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple instructions there so that you can record your voice, send it over to us, and hopefully we can play it here and then give our answer with our voices. But Matt, let's get to the first question of this episode. This one is about investing in properties or in the market.
Hi, guys. This is Amanda from Windsor, California. I discovered your show about a month ago and have already listened to about 70 episodes. Your advice has really affected my mental shift from surviving comfortably to growing wealth, and for that, I'm very grateful. I am a somewhat new government employee, and I have a pension that will pay 95% of my highest earning level if I retire at 67. I'm 38 now. I plan to contribute to a Roth IRA when eligible, but that would probably be for the next 5 years or so. I have no TSP, HSA, or 401k option. I have no significant debt aside from our home loan and about $30,000 in student loans. My partner is also saving for his retirement, so let's assume that he has his bases covered, but not excessively so. My question is it smarter to put money into a traditional IRA or save to invest in real estate? We recently purchased our home and would most likely rent it out before selling if we decided to downsize in the future. We live in a traditionally safe and robust rental market, but would probably want to invest out of state at first due to the difference in housing cost, but only in markets we're familiar with. So what do you think? Should I still focus on retirement savings or take the leap into real estate? Thanks for all you do.
All right, Amanda, thank you so much for that question. And Joel, you know, one thing that stood out to me about Amanda's question, there's like a real sense of maturity in what it is that she is bringing to her question. Unlike you and I on this show, but she is looking pretty far off into the distance.
Did you just call me immature?
I did.
or both of us. She
just has the proper perspective when it comes to some of these moves that she's looking to make with her money. Yeah. She realizes that it's going to take a good amount of time. She realizes that this is something that's going to take years. And oftentimes when we're looking to make some of these changes in our life, we want it to be done. We want it to happen overnight. We want to see immediate changes. We want to see things. It's like, well, I have all the knowledge now. Why can't I make the changes and immediately see some results? But the fact is, that's just not how the personal finance game is played. Yeah. And that's just something that I appreciate about Amanda. She's talking about how maybe in like 5 years, I'll be eligible for a Roth IRA.
Yeah, it doesn't happen
like
overnight.
That.
But exactly. I love that she's already made a mindset shift. And that is so powerful. I still remember it. It didn't happen overnight. But I still remember that mindset shift because I've told the story on this show of how I grew up with money, how my parents didn't handle it well, and how I had this kind of frugal penny-pinching mindset. And I didn't realize until early 20s, still I learned it young, fortunately, but that, wait a second, I don't have to just have this like this view of money, like it's all trying to escape through my fingers and I've got to try to keep as much in as possible. Like I can build wealth, and that kind of shift to the building wealth mindset is clutch. It's key in helping you as you know you move forward with those money decisions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Amanda, she has that mindset, but your question specifically, Amanda, you're talking about real estate or investing in the stock market. And first of all, we are fans of investing in real estate because savvy investors, real estate investors specifically, they're often able to turn out better results, better returns than their counterparts who are exclusively investing within the stock market. But that being said, there are some important caveats that we have to mention. And one of those is complexity, right? There are a lot more moving parts when it comes to investing in real estate. There's a lot more due diligence and work required. So for instance, like buying index funds on autopilot, that's something like it's a one or a two out of 10 on the mental energy spectrum and on the spectrum of complexity. Saving up for and pouncing on that perfect rental property that's going to cash flow well, that's going to be more like a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I mentioned that because like the returns can be superior, but it's often going to require much more time, much more energy on the front end. And so a question to ask yourself is like, do I have the resources to dedicate to real estate in order for this to be a successful endeavor? I think it's important to think through how passive you want this investment to be. It sounds like you are pretty happy with the job that you have. Like, I feel like that's something else to kind of consider is, well, it doesn't seem like you want to change careers. If, for instance, you were saying, I'm totally sick of my job, I'm really obsessed, infatuated, I really want to get into real estate, well, I would say, all right, well, cool. This is something that is going to require more of your time. This could be something that you could pursue professionally. I mean, you could even get your realtor's license. Like, this could be something where you increase the discount available to you via your professional pursuit of this activity. But if this is just something that you're thinking about doing on the side, just realize that it's not an apples to apples comparison when you're talking about the time and energy required.
Yeah, I remember, I don't know, this was maybe a year ago or something, Matt, where you and I, we did an episode about the myth of passive income. Mm-hmm. And that phrase gets thrown around a lot in our world and in the personal finance world. But the truth is, there's not much out there that's truly passive. And index funds, investing every 2 weeks in index funds in those retirement accounts is probably the only thing. Like you said, it's probably a one or a two. Like, it's really simple and it doesn't take much effort or thought.
Barely there.
Yeah, it barely registers on your brain, but you're doing something proactive for your future. But if you're investing in real estate, it's a different ballgame. And people talk about it as passive income, but the reality is that there's a lot of work at play. So it doesn't really function that way in your life. It requires a lot more mental energy. And Amanda also mentioned investing out of state, which is certainly possible. But David from Bigger Pockets, I remember he came on our show a couple years ago, Matt, and he actually wrote the book on that. He wrote the book on investing out of state. And so if you're really, really interested in doing that, Amanda, we would say check out his book and maybe go back and listen to that episode. But yeah, even though real estate outside of California is going to be more financially accessible, and it's probably going to provide better returns for you, at least on a month-to-month cash flow basis. It's also a bigger gamble to buy a property that's further away from where you live. And basically, then you've got to find a management company to take care of it for you. You've got to find the one that you trust, that keeps up the property well, that has your best interest at heart. You're just introducing additional layers of risk if you're looking at long-distance landlording. And so it's not that it can't be done. It's just that we're talking about ramping up the level of difficulty even more.
Basically, we're talking about margins that are getting even thinner. Because like you said, Joel, when you hire management, I mean, that directly has an impact on your day-to-day, your month-to-month expenses.
Yeah. And one of our friends, Matt, and previous guest, 5 a.m. Joel, he bought a house thousands of miles away because he's a Californian too. He lives in LA and he bought one in another state. I believe it was in Texas. And he found out that his tenant was using the property for an illegal side hustle, which is, you can guess what that might be. And so those are the kind of things where if you're not present or actively involved in the management of your property, you never know what can happen. And so I've known a lot of people who have kind of like decided that because the numbers make more sense with long distance landlording, then that's the path they're going to go. But it doesn't always work out that way in actuality.
Totally. Yeah. We think of real estate investing as more of like an advanced strategy. It is an awesome one, but it's just going to require more money up front, as well as that research, that time, that fortitude as well. After you make some offers, you miss out on some properties that you really thought were going to be the one. And, if you told us that you were already investing within your retirement accounts, like for years, then I think we might have a different answer for you. But for now, we would suggest, you start off by sticking money within that IRA and start just buying basic index funds on the reg. And if you are then able to max that out while continuing to save for that future down payment, then I think we'd be ready to give you two thumbs up for that property purchase down the road. You just want to make sure that you're tackling your investing goals in a way that can like build on previous successes. There's sort of like an order of investing, and when you can easily sock away money to invest within an individual retirement account that's widely diversified, that's definitely going to be the first step we would recommend.
For sure. And when you're talking about another thing that needs to be mentioned, Matt, is diversification, because when we're talking about buying one property, let's say in a state, maybe 10 states away, you're not very diversified, right? You own one property and you're hoping against hope that the market is in your favor. But when you buy an index fund, you're buying hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of companies in one lump sum with a small amount of money even, and so you're well diversified. So we don't want you putting all your eggs in one basket, is what we're saying, Amanda. That's the opposite of what you're doing when you buy an investment property. Mm-hmm. So and again, if you'd already had an incredibly well diversified portfolio, like Matt said, because you've been investing for years on end inside of a retirement account, sticking your money in index funds, then it would be probably a different answer. But you already own a home, you already have some exposure there, and since we're really just talking about investing here, we're going to point you in the direction of investing in the market, making sure that your assets are more diversified while still taking the easy route too.
Absolutely. And that's not to say that in several years, she could continue, let's say she maxes out her IRA, her retirement accounts, and then still has additional money, she could stick that money into a brokerage account.
Yeah.
And she's talking about doing this years down the road. So 3, 4, 5 years down the road, if she then wants to get into investing in real estate, that is something she could totally take some money out of that brokerage account to put towards a property that she wants to purchase. And hopefully by then, interest rates might be in a better spot as well. It's difficult right now to think through buying an investment property with a national average for 30 years pushing close to 7%.
Yeah. And
so
that's
the timing.
Real estate investors are going to pay even more than that.
Yeah, exactly. So with all that in mind, we think that investing in the market is the smart thing to do right now.
I like this as a medium to long-term goal for Amanda, though, right?
Absolutely.
Let's make the short-term goal index funds in the IRA. Let's make the medium to long-term goal.
But down the road,
buying an investment property.
Then you can do it.
Yeah.
And also, Amanda, by the way, you mentioned not having access to some of those other retirement accounts that we like to talk about all the time. But having that pension, which we didn't even touch on, that more than makes up for access that you don't have. But you also don't want to fully rely on that pension. And so because of that, we're glad to see that you're still choosing to invest in other tax advantaged accounts, even though you've got that bird in the hand with the pension. It's a great thing to have, but don't solely rely on that. We love that you are looking for other ways to also invest your money.
Yeah. Anybody who has a pension, they might assume, oh, cool, that's going to take care of me. I don't need to invest for myself in anything else. But we would say, no, that's not the case. You should be investing alongside that pension. Granted, there are many people who have access access to a pension anymore, but let's say our teacher listeners, Matt, they should still be investing apart from their pension, saving up for their future, because yeah, their pension is going to help out a lot, but it's not going to cover all their expenses in retirement. But we got more questions to get to on this episode. We're actually going to take an interesting one about car insurance, and we'll get to that one right after this.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are back from the break, and here in a second, we're going to hear from a listener who is asking about what to do with an old 401k from a previous employer. But first of all, let's get to that car insurance question that touches on an aspect of car insurance that I don't think we've ever talked about.
Hey, Matt and Joel, this is Dakota from Davenport, Iowa. I love the show, and I'm a big fan of craft beer myself. You guys have taught me so much over the past year I've been listening, and I really appreciate it. I got a question for you today about CPI and car insurance. I have a car loan for $5,000, which I've paid down a few hundred dollars the past few months. My bank found out I only have liability and they charged me a fee of $840, which is annually, to insure the loan. So if I pay liability insurance and pay that CPI every year, that would be $1,920 annually. I shopped around for full coverage to get rid of the CPI, and the cheapest I could find was $4,000 annually. Is it worth getting full coverage and paying the additional cost to have more coverage on my vehicle and no CPI, or opt for $2,000 less a year? I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this.
All right, Matt, let's get to this question. It's an interesting one. And we usually, when we talk about CPI, we're talking about the Consumer Price Index.
Exactly.
Inflation. But we're talking about something different today.
That is a different thing.
Yeah. Well, and first off, we should say that car insurance can be expensive. Anybody who drives a car knows this. And it's crucial to look into what your insurance company is going to charge you on an annual basis before you buy a car, whether you're buying used or new. I would call my insurance company and say, hey, look, I'm planning on upgrading to this 2012 Toyota Camry, because right now maybe you're driving like a 2003 or something like that, and you're like, I'm gonna roll with some fresh wheels. We'll call up and ask ahead of time, how much more am I going to be charged for insurance by making this fancy upgrade?
That's right.
Getting this new car.
That's how to money fresh, by the way. Right. How to money fresh is a 2012 opposed to an 03. Yeah.
Well, and the truth is, older cars are typically going to save you money on multiple fronts. They're cheaper up front, right, of course. That they're just going to cost you less out of pocket to buy the car. But for lots of folks, if you opt for an inexpensive car, you can self-insure to a greater degree, which means you're going to avoid the need for comprehensive coverage. And that is great, because only having liability is going to save you big money in insurance premiums. So that kind of leads us into the heart of Dakota's question here.
That's right. Yeah. But that being said, it's going to take some time for Dakota to get to that point, because he still owes money on this vehicle. And so what he's talking about here in his question, he mentioned CPI, which stands for Collateral Protection Insurance. It's also known as Force Placed Insurance. Basically, the way it works, your lender is going to make you have this coverage if you haven't opted to get enough insurance coverage on the vehicle that they are selling you or lending you the money for you to be able to buy. Essentially, they're protecting themselves in this scenario. It's not unlike PMI when it comes to housing. So that is private mortgage insurance, where the lender is taking out this additional policy because there's basically a higher chance of you not paying your mortgage payment.
Yeah, because you didn't come with enough money to the closing table.
Exactly. And that's basically what's going on here. They're kind of penalizing you for not maintaining a high enough degree of coverage on that vehicle. But you can avoid this expensive policy by getting enough insurance coverage on your own, ensuring that the asset, in this case the car, that you're still paying for is well protected.
Yeah. All right. So it's true. Dakota can avoid paying this CPI, which it sounds expensive, like this policy, by making sure that his auto insurance policy meets the minimums that are outlined in the sales agreement. And that would mean getting full coverage on this automobile, because he still owes money on it. But like he mentioned, it's way more expensive, right, than CPI, which is actually kind of odd, because typically full coverage would be more affordable than this force-placed insurance.
Right.
I'm not really sure why his quotes are coming in so high.
It's kind of backwards. Like normally, like you are paying a serious premium for CPI, but in this case, it sounds like he is paying a serious premium for his full coverage compared to what the increased rates were going to be for CPI.
Yeah, and that could be because he's got tickets on his driving record, or maybe a not so great credit score. We've talked about how your credit score often influences the premiums that you're going to pay for insurance, especially for car insurance. And Dakota, I know you said you shopped around, and I think he phrased it like the cheapest that he could find. Mm-hmm. But I would do more shopping. I would shop extensively, because we're talking about big chunks of change here. We're talking about a large amount of money. So if I were you, I would contact Policy Genius. I would look at the website like Caribou. I would look at call a local independent agent. I would want to leave no stone unturned in my search for a lower rate if I were you, because this is big money. We're talking about $1,000+ a year. And so if you can find a car insurance company who is willing to give you full coverage at a lower rate, that would be the ideal scenario. If I were you, I'd be working my butt off to find something like that.
And especially considering he's in the state of Iowa, and Iowa is one of the more affordable states to insure a vehicle. It's not like, I don't know what the most expensive state is, but we looked it up. Iowa is actually pretty dang affordable. But Dakota, let's say that $4,000 is the lowest price that you can find for some reason. If that's the case, then if it was me, I would most likely stick with the CPI and pay that extra $800, even though I wouldn't be getting any additional benefit from the CPI because it's just there for the lender. Paying an additional $2,000 on top of that for an annual premium around $4,000, that's just like I'm not going to be driving a car at that point. Like, I would much rather ride my bike somewhere as opposed to paying that much stinking money to get around.
Yeah. You could almost Uber every day instead potentially even save money.
Exactly.
I would walk and bike and Uber, and it just seems like prohibitively expensive.
Find more creative ways to get around. Take the bus.
Exactly.
Public transportation. Just there've got to be other options than paying that much money for car insurance. And hopefully this goes without saying as well, but we want you to work to pay off that loan quickly. Because once you've been able to do that, you're going to now be able to self-insure, like we were talking about at the beginning of your question, because you're going to be able to save up a solid chunk of cash in the bank, in your savings account, to pay for repairs, or even for a new used car if you were to get in an accident that, you know, ended up totaling your current ride. Then you can save a big chunk of money by opting for liability coverage only. And so there's just multiple ways where you are paying more than you need to be because you've got a loan on this car. You could have gotten a more affordable car, a cheaper car, where you could have paid cash up front, which then would have lowered your premiums, which because you would have not had to pay additional money for CPI. You would then not have to carry comprehensive and collision. There are just multiple factors that are working against you. And then one final note here. Drive this car for a really long time, because the longer you can go without a car payment moving forward in the future, the more that you're going to be able to pay attention to and then begin to crush some of the other financial goals that you have. It seems like that this one issue, this one transportation question, might be keeping you from making like some serious progress with some of the other things in your life.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it's true, man. That happens for a lot of people. They often allocate too many dollars towards transportation in their lives, towards cars, insurance, gas, depreciation, maintenance, all that kind of stuff. And they find very little left over to be able to save for things that matter, to be able to invest for their future. That's a real problem, right? Yeah. We should all be looking to, I think, lessen the amount of our dollars in our budget that go towards transportation.
Yeah. And also, too, I don't want you to feel like we're beating up on you, Dakota, because from personal experience, I have made these exact same mistakes. My biggest financial mistakes in my past had to do with cars.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of preaching to my younger self.
Well, it's never our goal. It's never our goal when we take listener questions to make people feel bad.
No.
It's really just to provide the best information that they can move forward in the best way. And the truth is, the more we can lessen the cost of a car in our lives, the more we can find alternative ways to get around, the better off we're going to be. And especially when it's this prohibitively expensive. So for Dakota, it might even make the most financial sense to sell this car because the insurance is so dang expensive. Find another way to get around. Can you get by without a car until you saved up the money to pay cash for one? I don't know. I'm just saying that should be thrown in the mix at least when it comes to how he's thinking about this decision. And, you know, just for everybody else out there too, Matt, the price difference, I looked this up, between full coverage and minimum coverage across the 50 states, the average difference is somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 a year. And it's not that we're recommending minimum coverage. That might be a cheap move. You might need more coverage than that on your car. It could cost you more in the long run, right? Let's say you cheap out on coverage, you get in an accident, and you're out of pocket a whole lot more. But it's helpful to know that there are ways to opt for a policy that's going to eventually cost you a whole lot less. And so hopefully this motivates Dakota, but also a bunch of How to Money listeners who haven't recently done so, to get out there and shop rates. We've got an article about a bunch of different ways you can save on your insurance. We'll link to that in the show notes. But Dakota, we wish you the best of luck finding better coverage for less money. And we wish the same for everybody out there.
That's right. And with those additional funds, Dakota might be able to funnel more of his dollars into a retirement account. Our next question has to do with just that.
Hi, Matt and Joel. My name is Gio. I'm from Florida. I've been listening to you guys for the last couple of years now. I really enjoy everything you do for us. Today, I have a question regarding my 401k. My last employer offered a 401k from Fidelity. I have probably less than $3,000 in it at the moment. Unfortunately, my new job doesn't offer any 401k, but they have an HSA plan. So should I wait till I get a job with 401k and roll it over, or turn it into a Roth IRA? Thank you, and I really appreciate everything you do. Bye.
All right, Gio, thanks for your question, and we appreciate you being a listener to How to Money. First thing, let's give some mad props to your previous employer because they had their 401k, the company retirement plan there with Fidelity.
Round of applause, please.
Absolutely. They're one of the absolute best in the business because they keep costs low. Expense ratios, they're the main difference between index funds that all the different brokerages offer, because you know, the actual stocks within the funds are basically identical, right? Like an S&P 500 fund over at Fidelity, it's basically going to be the same over at State Street, right? Their holdings are all going to be the same. And so the way that you get the best performance is by minimizing those fees. And so, for example, Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard, they all have the most affordable funds or S&P 500 funds at like 0.01 to 0.03%.
Which is like microscopic, man.
It's basically not even there.
Yeah, but you can't find them.
But imagine if you're paying 2.31% every single year. If that were the case, you would see much lower returns because that fee is going to eat into your investments. And by the way, I didn't just make up that 2.31% number. That's an actual expense ratio of an S&P 500 fund.
Ugh.
It's like Guggenheim Investments or something. I barely even want to mention them because I don't want... Well, actually, it's good to call them out because there's no stinking reason that they should be charging that much for
That's
something
outrageous.
That you can get virtually for free with one of our low-cost providers.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I can't imagine if that's what they're... the fee on their S&P 500 fund, like what do they charge for other more actively managed
like
funds?
A, like a fancy fund. It's yeah. Got to be probably, yeah, I mean, double that.
You're never going to make any returns
7%.
There. Yeah, that's pretty astronomical, pretty awful. We just
egregious.
We just had a chart about the high cost of fees, how they impact your returns over time in a recent newsletter, Matt, and you can find it on our Instagram page as well. But it's amazing, like something like a 2.3% fee, even that, like you might say, oh, okay, that sounds high, but maybe it's not ridiculous, but it can massively crush your returns in a big way. I mean, costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars in your investing career. And yep. Let's talk about rollovers though, because that's what Gio's really asking about. Just a quick mention for other folks, how many listeners with an old 401k who haven't looked at that account maybe in years, they should really consider rolling over their 401k into one of the low-cost companies. And in particular, if your old workplace retirement account is with an insurance company or it's with somebody like Guggenheim that charges just out of control, insane fees, it's time to get out because there's a good chance you're paying way too much more than you should. And the cool thing is you can do this rollover yourself. It's not too difficult to make that happen. But we've also mentioned Capitalize recently on the show a number of times, and we'll probably keep talking about them whenever we're talking about rolling over a 401k, because they're going to help you get this done. They do it for free, and you can choose from the best affordable companies. Matt, you mentioned Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard. Capitalize works with all the above. And so you can you can basically have them do the rollover, manage it on your behalf. They don't charge you a penny, and then you've gone from massive fees to super low fees, and you've done a financial adulting task with very little effort on your part.
That's right. But Gio, you mentioned not just rolling your old account to a new brokerage, but converting it into a Roth IRA as well. And this could be a great move for you, especially while the market, it's kind of in a slump. It's in a bit of a swoon. It's important to note, however, that you'll be converting from a traditional 401k into a Roth IRA, which is going to come with some tax consequences. But if you're prepared to pay Uncle Sam a bit of money come April, paying a little bit of tax now in order to make that conversion happen, that could be a brilliant move on your part. And that's because you'll pay those taxes now. You'll do that just one time, but then that account will never be taxed again. You will never have to worry about money that you are converting over after that point.
Yeah, especially when it's kind of a small sum. It makes it easier to take that tax gut punch. And that's because, yeah, if you make that conversion from a traditional account into a Roth, you're going to pay tax on the conversion. How much money is that going to be? That's a really good question, right? That depends on which tax bracket you find yourself in. But it could be anywhere from 10% of the total to 37% of the total. That just depends.
If you're making bank.
Yeah. If you're like Lives of the Super Rich and Famous, then you're going to be at that 37% rate. Our general advice would be that it makes the most sense if you're opting to convert to a Roth and your effective tax rate is somewhere in the teens, right? So
teens or even lower.
Yeah, ideally lower, right? But once your marginal rate is up in the 20% range, it starts getting more difficult to take that plunge. And luckily, since we're talking about a fairly small amount of money here, like we said, $3,000, the taxable amount is likely to be a few hundred bucks, like not too shabby. It's not going to make this massive difference in how much you're going to owe come April. in all likelihood, you'll barely notice it. But this one move could shelter you from a lot of potential future taxation.
That's right. Especially considering, so he just got a new job. And let's say his new job, he knows he's going to be on this pathway to making X amount more every single year. If he knows that that's going to be the case, man, it makes all the sense in the world to go ahead and swallow what feels like a tough pill to swallow right now, but just trust us, it's likely going to be tougher off in the future.
Yeah, if Gio's like starting to make like Malibu beachfront property kind of money, and he's like, oh yeah, my income's going way up, guys.
Not Malibu, he's from Florida, dog. We're talking Miami.
Yeah, true. Yeah, all right. Maybe he's got two
Miami
places.
Waterfront.
Maybe he's got
money.
He's bi-coastal at this point, right? That's how much money he's got. And if he's getting into that territory, then it makes more sense, right, to pay the tax now before he starts making the big bucks.
Yeah, sooner than later for sure. And actually, while we're talking about taxes, Gio, you know, you mentioned that you've got access to an HSA at your new job. Unfortunately, you don't have access to that 401k, but HSAs are the most tax advantage retirement accounts out there. We talked about this back in the day, back in episode 105. If y'all out there, if you're listening and you've never heard us talk about HSAs, go back and listen to that episode, because you'll realize the triple threat, the triple tax advantage that that account has. But start contributing to that account as well, since you have access to it. And hopefully that account is going to be with a low-cost company, again, like Fidelity, because that's something that they offer, HSAs. We appreciate you asking the question, and you are asking all the right questions. I like that you're on the right track. We love where you're going with your money, and we wish you all the best of luck.
Yeah, my brother-in-law was actually texting me this morning, Matt, about HSAs, and he's like, man, all right, how do I convince all my coworkers that they need to be socking money in an HSA? Because I guess they could put money in an HSA or an FSA. They have the option. And a lot of his coworkers go in the FSA route. And I'm like, man, preach the gospel of the goodness of the HSA. Because if you start investing money in there, it's the only account that we know of where you'll never, ever pay tax on money that goes in, or the money that grows, or money that comes out. It's pretty dope.
So, for qualified expenses.
Yes, exactly. Spoken like a true disclaimer. Thank you. All right. We got more questions to get to, Matt, including one about moving to a retirement house. Not like a nursing home, but like...
Not like a retirement home, yeah, no.
No, but like their retirement house. Yeah. And we'll get to that one. Plus one more, we'll get to those right after this.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
All right, we're back taking listener questions, and Joel, let's get to this question that has its roots back in the snarled supply chains from the pandemic.
Hi, How to Money team. This is Stephanie in Houston, Texas, she, her, and I was wondering, is it a better time to buy a used vehicle or a brand new one? Basically, next year, me and my partner are expecting our first child, and I've been hearing on various financial podcasts that it's a terrible time to buy a used vehicle. So I was wondering, is that true or how true is that? And what I'm comparing this question to in my mind is sometimes people say it's a better time to rent versus to own. Obviously, everyone's circumstances and situations are different, but I'm just curious in a general perspective, is it truly a terrible time to buy a used vehicle? Thank you so much, and I love the podcast. Take care.
All right, Stephanie, first off, congrats on the baby. Babies are the best.
They are.
I was holding one the other day, and I was like, this is so nice.
I haven't held a baby in a long time.
And I had to give it back, and I was like, that's cool too, though. I love my kiddos, but don't want any more. But yeah, I'm so glad that you're enlarging your family, and let's talk about buying a car, because right now, now is probably not a good time to buy a car at all, whether we're talking new or used. But the sad reality is it's also not a good time to buy bacon or eggs or houses or just like all sorts of things, because inflation is just kind of run amok, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So we would just say like, go on a spending strike. Don't buy anything ever, and then you'll be just fine. But obviously, that's not the reality we live in. We have to spend money on things. And so, yeah, telling folks to sit on their hands, not buy anything at all, that's not helpful. So we won't do that. We'll avoid it. But we will do our best to offer real advice that helps you make a smart purchase here, Stephanie, because even though the used and new car markets are still pretty funky, we think there's some solid advice that we can lay out to help you make an informed decision.
Yeah, you know, car prices, in particular, used car prices are not something that typically fluctuate or are all that volatile. But this is one of those things where over the past couple of years, we've seen the prices do something that we've never really seen before, which is increase year over year, as opposed to go down in cost. But it seems like the used car market is now starting to moderate. So are the prices. But even still, Stephanie, that means cars are costing a good bit more today than they were even just a couple years ago. The average price of a used car is now $28,000, which for a used car, right? We're not talking new, we're talking used. This is 9% more than it was last year. But the good news is that supply is increasing, and because of that, prices have come down a bit. And it looks like that prices are going to continue to come down even more in the coming months. You asked about new cars as well. Those have gone up in price even more, somewhere closer to 13% year over year.
Yeah, that's largely because of the chip shortages, right, Matt?
Chip shortage. So there's a chip shortage, and a lot of those chips are going into... So you've got a car manufacturer, and they've got your base model, and then they got the luxury model.
That's right.
You've got a limited number of chips. What cars are you going to put those chips into? You're likely going to go for the ones that are going to give you the most margin.
Yeah, the ones that cost more because they, make
exactly.
you more money.
Exactly, yeah. And so either way you slice it, though, car prices are up. But that being said, we're rarely fans of buying new, especially right now. Actually, on that note, we've got an article up on the site that we can link to, because buying a new car, it could make sense if you plan on keeping it for a really long time, like for a decade or longer. Or if you've saved up the cash and it's just something that you want, but whatever you do, do not finance a new car.
Yeah, especially with rates going up.
Especially with rates going up. And better yet, we do think that going used is likely going to be the best path for you to take.
Yeah, buying used is the best path for almost everyone. We talked about this just a little bit earlier on the show, Matt, how having a used car is going to save you money on insurance, mm-hmm. right? Your car is going to depreciate less, so you're taking it on the chin less with how much value your car is losing every year. I mean, there's so many reasons for most people to buy new and to spend less money on a car so that it takes up less of your budget. But yeah, like you said, like all signs are pointing to the fact that the used car market is and will continue to be returning to some sort of a state of normalcy, which is the opposite of where things have been the past couple of years, like the sourcing parts and manufacturing a car. It's this long, arduous process. It takes a while for all the supply chains mm-hmm. to ripple through the car manufacturing industry. So even as things are getting back to normal, it's not happening overnight. But as more new cars are becoming available, that takes pressure off the used car market. And hopefully that'll mean more affordable prices. So I don't know, if it was me, Stephanie, I would wait as long as I could, as used cars yep. should resume some sort of typical depreciation in the coming year or two. And I totally understand. I get the impulse to buy a different car with a baby on the way. But the truth is, depending on which car you're driving, unless you're driving like literally some sort of two-seater, you can put a baby in most cars, and you might want to prioritize a car that has, you know, more safety features or something like that. And the truth is that you don't necessarily need to swap cars just because you're having a baby. Unless you have some sort of sports car that only seats two people, you'll probably want a different car at some point. But it would also be a good time to ask yourself the question, like whether or not the car you're currently driving actually works now that you've got a baby on board, or whether you actually have to get something new or not.
Yeah, I think folks think that you said baby on board, it makes me think of like
the bumper sticker.
The bumper stickers, the magnets on the back of oftentimes the minivans or the big SUVs. You don't have to necessarily get the sticker and the minivan, or the sticker and the SUV. Like you said, Joel, you can continue. I'm sure it's not going to be easy to do this, but it is totally possible to hit the button on the seat where it flips forward and then you click that baby seat back there. Like mm-hmm. that is totally doable, especially if that means that in the near future, maybe in the next 18 months, you're going to be able to get a used car for much less money. But regardless, when the time comes, we definitely consult with Consumer Reports as you're looking at some of those different used models, because you want to make sure that you're able to research whichever car it is that you want to buy. You want to make sure that it's going to work for you and your family for years to come. And also, you want to make sure that you get whatever car you're looking at checked out by a trusted mechanic. You want to make sure that you are not purchasing something that's in need of some serious repairs that's going to set you back hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. But one other thing, if you are making a swap, right? So if you are selling a car and then purchasing a new car, or not a new car, but a used car, then it doesn't really matter as much, because if the used car market is hot, well, if you're able to sell a vehicle but then also buy one at the same time, it's not like you are getting totally screwed over. If you are looking to add a car to the fleet, though, that's when what we've said previously definitely applies, where you want to wait as long as possible. Because while we don't know the future, we do think that that's the direction that things are going, as there is going to be more new car inventory available.
Yeah, a swap, not so big a deal right now, but buying a new to you used car is, it's going to cost you more than it normally would. And mm-hmm. we do think those prices are going to come down. It might take a minute, but being patient and actually
being patient is going to pay.
Doing a little more of an assessment about whether or not you need that car in your life or not would be a smart move. And if you do, sometimes you just got to bite the bullet, right? But we would also say you can buy a great car that is older that will serve you and your new baby well as well. So Stephanie, best of luck to y'all in this car search and as you grow your family. Matt, let's get to the last question for this episode. This one is about renting out a house that they bought to eventually live in.
Hi guys, my name is Cindy and I live in the Indianapolis, Indiana area. And I have a couple questions for you about our housing situation and the changes that we're going to be making. So like I said, I live in Indiana and we have bought a retirement home in Arizona. And in a few years, we will sell our current home, which we do not have a mortgage on, and move to our Arizona home, which has a mortgage. In the meantime, we are renting out our Arizona home, and I have questions about the best way to manage this transition. Should we make improvements while it's still a rental to reduce our profits? There are some things we would like to upgrade and want to know if we should do them now or wait until we move. Is there anything I need to be aware of when selling a primary residence and then making our rental our primary residence? And should we keep the mortgage on the rental when we move or pay it off? Any other advice you can share would be greatly appreciated. Thanks a lot.
All right, Cindy, thank you so much for that question. These are all actually great questions. And again, like one of our questions earlier, I love that you are thinking ahead, already owning this home and renting it out. This sounds like a savvy move to me. And, you know, hopefully you've got a low rate locked in that kind of just makes it sweeter.
Oh my gosh.
Realizing that, oh, it's not like we've got to purchase a home in the next year in order to move, you know, to actually retire and head south. Finding a property is hard enough. I can't imagine doing that with rates where they are as well.
It's also so much easier to do it while you're still employed. W-2, bringing home the paycheck.
That is true.
You know, so it's just easier to qualify for that mortgage. And so thinking ahead in that regard can be helpful.
Exactly. Yeah. But let's go ahead and first talk about the practicality of the first part of your question, because undergoing renovations while tenants are in the home, this can potentially make the tenant unhappy. You might have some renters who are not happy with what you've asked them to endure, because, you know, how intrusive are these renovations going to be? In an enormous kitchen remodel like that could be really tough to pull off while someone is there living in the home, while they're paying you rent. But on the other hand, like some smaller, maybe some even medium-sized projects that improve the home for the current tenant, that could be feasible while also increasing what you're able to demand in rent. But it is important to note that you won't be able to deduct any of those costs. Yes, you know, you mentioned how, you know, the ability to reduce your profits. Like, you are going to reduce your profits. You're going to experience less money because of the money that you've spent towards improving this property. But the IRS won't let you deduct those expenses. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second. But first, I just want to mention, Matt, that, are those tenants going to be happy or not? I don't know, right? It depends on, how much work is being done, but it reminds me of when I was younger. I was early 20s and living in town Atlanta, and I was looking at this small one bedroom condo, and it was like way under market value. Why? Because the landlord wanted to do renovations while I was living in it, like extensive renovations. And I was like, I almost pulled the trigger because that's how cheap I am to live in this place. But I eventually was like, nah, it's just too much. Like, I can't deal with that. But if you're going to do extensive renovations, you're in all likelihood going to have to also give a price break to that tenant.
Yeah.
They might just be like, nah, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in this. But let's talk about, deducting those expenses, because the IRS has pretty strict definitions of the types of expenses that you can deduct on your annual taxes. You're going to be limited to what they deem ordinary and necessary expenses. And these are things like interest, taxes, utilities, insurance, and maintenance. And unfortunately, renovations, they don't typically qualify as maintenance. Instead, they're considered to be improvements, which you are able to depreciate on your taxes over the years, but you can't deduct those expenses.
Right. Yeah, and that's actually a word that she used, I'm pretty sure, in her question. She's like, I want to make some improvements. I want to make this property nicer. It's not like she's just talking about making some of these repairs. She's talking about actual upgrades to the property.
If you're adding like a second floor to the home or something like that, right, that is an improvement, which you're...
A very clear improvement.
Yeah, which you're not going to be able to deduct. Renovations don't typically qualify as maintenance. Instead, they're considered to be improvements, which you are able to depreciate on your taxes over the years, but you can't deduct those expenses. Any deducted expenses have to be actual maintenance and repair. So that means if you have a hole in your roof, you get it repaired, not replaced, right?
Get some new shingles in there. You don't get a whole new roof.
No, because if you get a whole new roof,
that's an improvement, baby.
And then you're going to depreciate it over a bunch of years.
27 and a half years, most likely.
Or let's say your HVAC's not working. You have it serviced. Well, you don't buy an entirely new unit, because if you have it serviced, you can deduct that expense. But if you buy an entirely new unit, you're talking about depreciating it over time. So that's the important conundrum here. And so you might just be annoying a tenant for no reason that's beneficial to your bottom line.
Bottom line, you probably want to wait until you move in, because the ability to have, and I mean, if this is a home that you're retiring into, you likely care about the quality of the work being done. There are so many small decisions when it comes to a renovation that you're likely going to want to have some input over the shade of paint or like the placement of a particular faucet or something. I don't know. Like, whatever it is that you're looking to do. But Cindy, you know, you also asked about selling your current home. Well, this is going to be another tax win for you guys, because you are not going to pay tax on any of the capital gains that are beneath the $500,000 threshold, the tax avoidance that you can achieve just from the sale of a primary home that's appreciated is pretty great. But then the question is, should you turn around and funnel those funds toward the mortgage of your of the new property, of the one down there in Arizona? Because traditional advice is going to say yes, that you should avoid having a mortgage altogether within retirement. And I definitely see the wisdom in that. But so much depends on what the rate is on that property that you've already got locked in. It depends on what your retirement portfolio looks like. It depends, you know, what immediate plans that you have once you retire to Arizona. Because let's say your mortgage is locked in at 4%. Well, if paying that off would mean tapping your Social Security earlier, for instance, it's not, you know, this would be a terrible short-sighted move. And that's because every year that you are able to delay receiving any benefits, you're going to see that Social Security payout increase by 8%. And so there are so many additional factors that you do want to keep in mind. It's not like there's just an automatic, like, this is what you should do with that money.
Right. If you pay off that house, but then you're like, oh, now I got to tap my retirement funds in a down market to pay for this renovation that I really want to make happen. Well, then it would have been better to use that cash to pay for the reno than to pull it out of your retirement account.
Exactly.
In all likelihood.
Yeah. So, and a couple other things, Cindy, like you're asking about, like, things to keep in mind as you're moving basically from Indiana down there to Arizona. A couple things, homestead exemption. That's something that you probably want to make sure you file for. That way you're able to shield some of that equity, some of the value of that home from taxes. And then insurance as well, because you most likely, hopefully, what you've got on that property down there in Arizona is what's called a dwelling fire policy, where you have the actual home, the structure is insured, but not the stuff in it. Because you've got a renter in there, they've got their own renter's insurance. But as you move in there as your primary residence, of course, you're going to want your stuff covered in case, you know, God forbid there's a fire or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's really important to note. And I think it might make sense at this point in your life, Cindy, to consult a fee-only advisor. We don't always make that suggestion, but based on how complex your scenario is and all the big amounts of money that are at stake here with some of these decisions, you might want to pay for a few hours of time with somebody who can help you make some of these decisions, especially when we're talking about tapping retirement funds, taking Social Security, mm-hmm. multiple houses and mortgages, renovations, stuff like that. You might want to involve an expert. And it could cost you hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a few hours of someone's time, but that could be well worth it.
Save you. Yeah, you're spending hundreds and hundreds, but it might save you thousands and thousands, if not more.
That's right. So, and we would suggest, again, fee-only planners, fiduciary fee-only planners, and XY Planning Network is one of the places we typically suggest people go look for those, but there's also NAPFA, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. That's another great place to look for a fee-only advisor. So yeah, good job, Cindy. You're obviously crushing it, and we wish you the best of luck as you get closer to that retirement date. But Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had on this episode. This one.
This delightful beer.
This was so good. Yeah, what were your thoughts on this barrel-aged Flanders Red from Wild Heaven?
I think I've said this before, but I think this is a good barrel-aged Flanders like this is, especially one where they've added a little extra cherry, which is what they've done. It's with tart cherries. I think this is absolutely my favorite style of beer. It is so stinking good. It's acidic. It's fruity. It's got some funkiness from being aged within some wood. So it's got all those delicious oaky notes going along with it as well. Honestly, this is a fantastic mixed fermentation beer from our friends over there at Wild Heaven. I really enjoyed it. I'm assuming you did as well.
Oh my gosh, this was a grand slam for sure. The best beer I've ever had from this brewery. They've also made some crappy ones, but but this is definitely the best one they made.
So freaking good.
And I think it was like subtly complex. I really liked how it did have a ton of flavor notes going on, but none of them were overpowering. The cherries were nice and sweet. The vinegar tartness combined with the oaky presence from the barrels, it was just like
it all blended together
like
so
a little
well.
Symphony in my mouth, man. It was really good. So big thanks to Wild Heaven for making good beers.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad. So you picked this one up, and I'm glad you did, because we were talking with our friend Theo, and I don't know if he'd had a Flanders Red or if he was describing a beer and, you know, he's just like, I think I like these flavors. And we made the recommendation to him, and we're like, oh, dude, have you ever had a Flanders Red before?
we got to send him one of these.
Oh, he would. Yeah. We keep seeing that guy all over town. Like, ran up the mountain the other day. I saw him standing there at the top of the mountain talking to a friend. You saw him at Costco and the Braves game. Only thing that guy's missing is a Flanders Red in his hand.
I know. I'm surprised he didn't show up for this recording. So, all right. That's going to do it for this episode. You can find show notes with links to some of the sites and resources we mentioned up on our website at howtomoney.com.
BestFriendsOut.com.
But Joel, that's going to be it for this one, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.